And for me, I mean, I knew that there were many similarities, but to see them in action, that is, you know, it just kind of breaks a mental barrier. And I think especially for a lot of Muslims that are quite hardline sectarian on both sides of the camp, I think they should go to different mosques just because you realise we're not that different. And yeah, we all like our food at iftar time.
Islam is probably the most demonised religion in Britain, and Muslims are regularly the subject of negative media headlines, usually associated with extremism and terrorism. Faced by this onslaught, it can be difficult for Muslims to get their side of the story across, but that doesn't mean they're not trying.
Ramadan is perhaps the best time of year for Muslims to showcase their religion, and that's exactly what several initiatives across the UK have done, such as the Ramadan Tent here in central London, which welcomes up to 300 Muslims and non-Muslims every night to break the fast. And the idea behind these initiatives is very simple, that intimate human contact can break down barriers like nothing else.
The Ramadan Tent Project is run by student volunteers and adopts a gentle, non-confrontational, even subliminal approach when showing non-Muslims what Islam is. It seeks to demonstrate the values of Islam by setting an example instead of preaching, to build bridges between cultures and encourage interfaith dialogue through the simple act of sharing a meal.
We've been able to foster a platform for interfaith dialogue to explain, you know, the actual beautiful values of our religion, you know, and feel the community spirit most of all. I think, you know, when you look and you see, you know, there's people of all different colours and races sitting on the floor eating together, I think, you know, I think that's what it's about.
I grew up religious, so when I came across what was going on, I was really intrigued with the idea of fasting and praying, and so I wanted to learn more. And just the experience of meeting some of the best people I've ever met who have such sincere intentions, it made me want to get involved and learn more about what they were doing here and what Ramadan means.
Every night during the month of Ramadan, a different speaker gives a short talk here to everyone gathered. Then, after the Maghrib or sunset prayer, the fast is broken with rice, meat, fruit, desserts, and tea. Sometimes Islam won't crop up in conversation at all, but friendships are built, curiosity is aroused, and perhaps stereotypes would have been broken.
I think that I kind of really identified with the Muslim community by their standards, not drinking alcohol and fasting and things like that. So I didn't have any negative perceptions, but I think that being involved in a community helps me to understand the Muslim community even more and to be able to share that with my community back in the States.
Stephen Mills and Steve Smith are getting a sneak preview of the feast that awaits them in a few hours' time. These two non-Muslim teachers from Oldham in the north of England have been fasting all day as part of an initiative called Share Ramadan, the brainchild of Nanu Mia, another teacher. It's around 5:30 p.m.
Working in such a high Muslim school, I thought it'd be a brilliant experience for me to see what not only the colleagues that I have, but the kids that I teach go through. I just thought it'd give me a bit of an insight into what they go through and understanding.
How's it been for you so far? So you didn't get up for breakfast, first mistake, right?
No, yeah. I ate at about 11:30 last night. No, I didn't wake up. I'm not feeling too bad, actually. I thought hunger would be the big thing because I've got a healthy appetite, I want to say. But it's been the thirst that's really, really challenged me.
Did you know much about Ramadan? Why Muslims fast?
This is my second year doing it, and I'd say the first reason I did it was because, coming from my background, I had very little idea about Muslim religion, about Ramadan, the importance of it, why do it. So the first thing was I wanted to get to know more about it. That was my first reason for even doing it.
And how are you finding it?
Not too bad. Hunger has been okay. Lunchtime, walking around seeing some people eat, that was a bit difficult. Kind of had to turn away from that. Thirst is the main one. After about 10 or 11, it started to kind of kick in. Love a glass of water. And you kind of sometimes go to reach for it.
Challenge, invite, share. Share Ramadan.
Share Ramadan has become something of a social media phenomenon. Challenge a non-Muslim neighbor or colleague to fast for a day, break the fast with them, and share the moment and experience on social media. It's got non-Muslims all across Britain experiencing the Ramadan fast.
First day, I'm always told, is the hardest of the fast anyway. I was approached by one of my colleagues, Nana Amir, to take part in the challenge. It's a great way to get to know people, of course.
Share Ramadan started when the Muslim community were getting a lot of bad press. One thing I realised, you know, the media isn't on our side and saying so much things, and certain headlines are putting the lives of many innocent people at risk. So what can we do? You know, you have children, and would you want to leave them behind? Wealth or money? You know, why not? You know, a society that is just, that is fair, and that is safe. And that will only come about is when there is an understanding, and the barriers of fear and suspicion, when they have disappeared from our society.
It is that, for me, it's been that sacrificing things that you take for granted every day. Like, you know, people struggle for water, and I can just go and get one anytime, a glass of water or a drink of water anytime I want. People struggle for food, but, you know, at the end of this, I know I'm going to sit down with 10 or 12 friends and have a lovely meal.
Before I started working in the job I'm in now, all I knew about the Muslim faith was what I read, typically on media, newspapers, whatever it be. Then I've actually become friends with them, and I would like to think with Nana, who's invited me into his house to do Shah Ramadan, not only have I found out about the Muslim culture, but I've become closer with him, with other friends, so we can talk about anything. Doesn't have to be about Muslim, but it just means that there's not that kind of them and us type culture.
A few hours later, and at last it's nearly time to break the fast. Nanu lays on a delicious Bangladeshi meal in his front room, enough to satisfy any appetite, while around a dozen Muslim and non-Muslim colleagues and friends laugh and joke. Finally, it's time to tuck into the food. Stephen and Steve are obviously very relieved men.
It's the last Friday of Ramadan, and thousands of Muslims are preparing to march through the streets of central London, condemning Zionism and supporting the Palestinian resistance struggle, as they do every year during the annual Al-Quds March. Now, Ramadan is obviously mostly associated with spirituality and quiet reflection, but it's also a time when Muslims increase their efforts to promote justice in the public arena.
This Jerusalem Day march took place a year after Israel's war on Gaza, which killed over 2,000 Palestinians and devastated the infrastructure of the besieged territory. The Palestinian struggle against Israeli occupation and aggression has always been at the center of Islamic politics and has unified Muslims from different nations and traditions since Israel was created. The march climaxed outside the US Embassy in London, where, again, the centrality of the Palestinian cause for Muslims around the world was emphasized.
And today the people of Muslim countries around the world stand shoulder to shoulder with moral-seeking people in the support of the Palestinian nation and gather in the streets to remind the world of the barbaric crimes and atrocities of the occupying Zionist regime.
Zionist is a criminal conspiracy, a colonizing project, which will only be complete with the disappearance of the Palestinian people.
This year's Ramadan also saw the high-profile launch of an attempt by a Sufi Muslim group to counter the Takfiri ISIL narrative, which has attracted a tiny minority of British Muslims. Pakistani scholar Taher al-Qadri unveiled a draft school curriculum in London which condemned ISIL and extremist ideology. Qadri, who has previously declared Takfiri's non-Muslim, said it was essential to teach people that terror was a violation of Islam.
Whatever philosophy and ideology is being propagated and practiced and enforced by ISIS or other terrorist organization, in part it was Al-Qaeda and Taliban and all those people, this is just an enmity and violation of Islam and Quran and the Prophet's conduct.
The initiative wasn't without its critics within the Muslim community itself, who said that it placed the emphasis on the Muslim community to clean up its act, while downplaying major factors behind radicalization, such as British foreign policy, Islamophobia, and racism. Nevertheless, there is general consensus amongst British Muslim leaders that the ISIL mentality and the Takfiri narrative needs to be driven out of the community.
Ramadan being a very difficult and challenging time for Muslims. We've had killings in Kuwait, we had murder taking place in Tunisia and other parts of the globe. So that kind of really affects the Muslims living in this country, in Leeds, because our name has been tarnished, our faith's been abused. Those who commit murder in the name of God, they are absolutely an affront to human dignity and an insult to God.
As the holy month of Ramadan draws to a close, British Muslims will really look forward to the festival of Eid. Now, Eid lasts about 1 or 2 days and is characterized by lots of socializing, delicious food, and fun activities for the children. It's a joyful occasion which marks the end of a month of really hard self-sacrifice. And British Muslims will hope that they can carry forward the lessons they've learned during the month of Ramadan and implement them during the course of the rest of the year.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
In the name of Allah, the most merciful, the most beneficent. Salaamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, my dear brothers and sisters and lovely listeners. Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode of The Lantern, brought to you by IRRB English Radio. During this time and era, especially with social media and its different forms and platforms taking the world by storm. Oh, that rhymed. It's really easy for us to get lost in the hype of the moment with all those influencers and self-made quote-unquote business women, the young entrepreneurs, supermodels, this and that. Well, they existed longer before Instagram ever came around, but right now there's more spotlight on them, and for some reason, people are striving more and more to become like this influencers, as they call themselves. I honestly don't like that word very much. Inshallah, if we ever have the time, I'll explain my viewpoint on it. But for now, as we were saying, it's really hard for us to establish a sound and healthy sense of identity for ourselves when even Instagram's camera filter is trying to change our appearance, change how we look, change our voice, sometimes even change our species with the weird features it creates for us. Anyway, so basically it gets hard. It gets hard to find ourselves and our voice and our place in all this chaos. And, oh, before I forget, let's listen to a short little thing. Can't call it a story or an anecdote, maybe just a reminder that our team has prepared for us. And we're going to be right back, so don't go anywhere.
You are unique. This is the title of today's story. Think what a remarkable, unduplicable and miraculous thing it is to be you. Of all the people who have come and go on the earth since the beginning of time, not one of them is like you. No one who has ever lived or is to come has had your combination of abilities, talents, appearance, friends, acquaintances, burdens, sorrows, and opportunities. No one's hair grow exactly the way yours does. No one's fingerprints are like yours. No one has the same combination of secret inside jokes and family expressions that you know. The few people who laugh at you the same things you do don't sneeze the way you do. No one prays about exactly the same concerns as you do. No one is loved by the same combination of people that love you. No one. No one before, no one to come. You are absolutely unique. Enjoy that uniqueness. You do not have to pretend in order to seem more like someone else. You weren't meant to be like someone else. You do not have to lie to conceal the parts of you that are not like what you see in anyone else. If you do not exist, there would be a hole in creation, a gap in history. Treasure your uniqueness. It is a gift given only to you. Enjoy it and share it. Share your uniqueness. Let it be free to flow out among your family and friends and people you meet in the rush and clutter of living wherever you are. That gift of yourself was given you to enjoy and share. Give yourself away. See it. Receive it. Let it tickle you. Let it inform you and nudge you and inspire you. You are unique.
The lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
So, as that short clip said, I personally found a few parts of it to be really uplifting and inspirational. And I felt like, you know what, I needed to hear that today. Because on some days it gets especially hard to find ourselves, find our feet, find our ground, and to feel proud of ourselves, of the skin we're in, of what we represent. And I think deep down the reason for it is because we feel like we have not accumulated enough value and worth within ourselves for us to be proud of what we represent. And that's very natural. In fact, a lot of these people that we see on social media and on general media, whether it's on the news, whether it's in the cinema, whether it's in music videos, the fact that they're so made up, so dolled up, they have so much filters on them, whether they're on magazine covers or, you know, hashtag just woke up, hashtag living my best life, they're all filtered, right? Whether it's some alleged raw material, unfiltered reality television show, it's not. All of it is based on some sort of agenda and propaganda, and it's meant to deviate and redirect the minds of the masses toward whatever objective and goal they want, right? And if we see those people and their scramble and their effort into representing themselves in a certain way, it's because they're actually hollow shells. It's because they have not reached that full potential of being human, and they haven't created enough values and assets within themselves, and that is why they need to pretend to be something they're not. None of them are what they display themselves to be. And if sometimes we feel like that as well, it's because we have been so emptied from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and filled with everything that is superficial and fleeting and unimportant and insignificant, in the sense that 5 years, heck, even 5 days from now, we won't feel that burning passion for it anymore. 5 days, 5 months, 5 years from now, we won't even remember it. And once we've reached our eternal abode, imagine how we would feel if we had to regret it. If we had to regret it during a time that remorse and regret would no longer help us, because we would not be given the chance to come back and correct the mistakes that we made. On the other hand, it's really important for us to remember that no matter how hard the world is trying to filter us out, the world is trying to drown out our voices and is trying to put us in this unimold, in this uniform, turning us all into similar objects, we mustn't forget that if we were meant to be similar, Allah would have created us that way, but He didn't. Allah had all the power imaginable and then some. He could have, as He has said in the Quran, He could have created us all as Muslims, all unified and united at heart with the same worldview and doctrine and ideology. He could have created us with the same skin color, the same features and complexion, the same ethnicity, the same likes and dislikes, but He didn't. He created us mukhtalifa, differently. That's all the time we have for today's episode of The Lantern. Thank you so very much for being with us. No matter where you are, what you're doing, or what you look like, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Proper Nutrition with Brother Sayyid Vahid Alavi in the program The Month of Allah.
Assalamu alaikum everyone, this is Sayyid Wahid and welcome to the month of Allah. We continue talking about Ramadan tips and what to eat and what not to eat during fasting or before fasting and for iftar. And some issues that pop up during the month of Allah, Ramadan, are some health problems. And I will talk in this program about the health problems, the causes, and the treatments for those health problems. Number one, constipation. Constipation can cause hemorrhoids and pain and indigestion with bloating. The causes are usually refined carbohydrates, low water consumption, and dietary fiber. And the treatments for that is low intake of refined carbohydrates, increased water intake, use of bran in baking, and brown and whole wheat flour. Number two, bloating. The causes are overeating, fatty and fried foods that we usually eat during the month of Ramadan, or spicy foods that some cultures have. Bloating foods like eggs, you have beans, lentils, and carbonated beverages. And the treatment for that is do not overeat. Now, this is very important. We try to overeat so that we can endure the fasting and that we do not feel the pain of hunger or thirst. And that's wrong. We are losing the track here because the philosophy of fasting, one part of it or one dimension of fasting is that you should feel thirst, you should feel hunger. So do not overeat and do not eat fatty and fried foods, and try to drink a lot of juice or water and avoid frying foods. Again, number three, weakness. This is very common during the month of Ramadan, especially for those who fast. Weakness in the body, you feel increased, the symptoms are increased sweating, weakness, fatigue, you feel tired, decreased energy, dizziness, pale appearance, and you feel like falling. And these symptoms occur more often in the afternoon. The causes are low water intake and reduced salt intake. What should we do? The treatments, try to avoid hot places, try to walk where you have shadow, and increase your salt and liquid intake. And note, hypotension or weakness should be confirmed by taking blood pressure. All right, so if you have a doctor that you could go to, or if you could take your own blood pressure, do it. And if the symptoms occur, you should do those things that I told you, because people with high blood pressure may need to rearrange their medications during Ramadan. I will continue in the coming programs of the month of Allah to give you more Ramadan tips about what to eat and what to not eat. Inshallah ta'ala, till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you. Ramadan Kareem.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة هو القرآن هو الفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Aperture.
As humans, the Earth is our home. It is the only home we have. The Earth is where we live, breathe, eat, and raise the future generation. Our entire life support system is dependent on the well-being of our natural environment and all of the species living on this beautiful blue planet. But what have we done to it? How have we preserved it? I'm Zari Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Unfortunately, our planet is in grave danger. Many species of animals and plants are nearing extinction. Our clean air and water supply is at risk, and more of our beautiful open spaces are disappearing as new buildings and factories are built. What is worse is that the Earth is getting warmer and warmer as we speak. This week's documentary explores the perilous state of our planet. Stay with us for the first part.
The issue, the tsunami warning.
Gives us a clear idea of what's happening.
The cloud is now moving south. It's harmless to people on the
ground. Over thousands of miles, why doesn't that energy dissipate?
The Earth isn't feeling well.
That is a...
Its fever has risen, and its situation is getting worse by the day.
Nowadays, we hear people saying the Earth's temperature is rising.
Is that the energy Celsius?
The average temperature of the Earth was about 15 degrees Celsius in the beginning of the 20th century. During the Ice Age, the average temperature of the Earth was only 5 degrees less. Take into consideration this 15 degrees and compare it to the 10 degree average during the Ice Age. Now, if this 15 degrees, God forbid, reaches 19 or 20 degrees, what age would you call that? The ebullient age? Naturally, the subsistence of life will end way before the ebullient age.
Of course, the Earth has other problems as well. But climate change or global warming is a major problem, which increases the frequency of droughts, storms, and other consequences and natural disasters that take place on the Earth's surface.
The existence of icebergs in the north and south poles cause reflection of solar energy, which is known as albedo. Without an ice cover, this energy will be absorbed by the Earth's surface and accelerate global warming, altering the average temperature on planet Earth. We can say the Earth has a fever. It may be 1 degree or 1 2/100 degrees.
There's a very simple formula. Q is heat energy.
which is equal to the mass of substance multiplied by C, which is a specific heat capacity multiplied by delta T. A 2-degree delta T, for instance, is multiplied by a huge mass at a specific heat capacity, which sums up to what? A very large cube. And what does that all mean? It means that all these signals I'm giving you are alarming. And it means that I'm continuously moving from the green line into the orange and red lines and into the danger zone.
Greenhouse gases are gases that can trap wavelengths larger than 4 microns within themselves. These are wavelengths that are radiated to the Earth from the Sun, and when reflected from the surface of the Earth, elements become trapped within the wavelengths. They trap greenhouse gases and absorb heat, which leads to the gradual warming of the Earth.
تدریجاً افزایش درمیانگین دمای کره زمین.
Just like inside a greenhouse, as in the ones used for farming, when solar radiation penetrates into it, the trapped heat is not completely removed, and it causes the inside of the greenhouse to become warmer than the outside. Greenhouse gases play the same role in the Earth's atmosphere.
Greenhouse gases per se are very useful. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which we usually refer to as carbon dioxide, is very useful because without these gases, the temperature of the Earth would fall to minus 19 degrees Celsius. Minus 19 degrees Celsius means a total freeze. It means no agricultural or farming product would be able to grow.
انجماد مطلق یعنی هیچ نوع رستنی هیچ نوع مواد غذایی اصلا امکان رویش نداره. طبیعتاً امکان بقای انسان روی کره زمین رو
obviously it wouldn't provide the requirements for human existence on the earth. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and the partial trapping of energy reflections from the Earth have caused the Earth's temperature to rise to 15 degrees Celsius. In other words, greenhouse gases have caused a 34 degree temperature rise. This process has obviously created the ideal situation we have for all living creatures to thrive. A forest is one factor responsible for absorbing greenhouse gases. It is necessary for soaking up greenhouse gases. Unfortunately, forests around the world are being brutally desecrated for their wood and their land. You can see many instances of deforestation around the world. Deforestation has taken place to enable farming, but also for building factories and cities. When these forests are destroyed, the global sources for absorbing greenhouse gases are weakened. With the proliferation of greenhouse gases and the increase of human activities on the surface of the Earth, which has provided the growth and spread of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the basis for absorbing and trapping thermal energy that is reflected from the surface of the Earth is further provided in the atmosphere.
The atmosphere's capacity for greenhouse gases is 2900 gigatons. until now, in the year 2010, about 65% of its capacity has been emitted. So from 2010 until the year 2100, the atmosphere only has the capacity to handle another 35%.
And obviously the basis has been provided for the Earth's average temperature of 15 degrees to rise to 15.5, 15.7 or 15.9 degrees and even to 16 degrees at times.
از این 1900 گیگاتون منتشر شده در کل جهان در اتمسفر.
A large portion of the 1900 gigatons emitted into the atmosphere belongs to countries which have caused more emissions starting from the 1840s and 1850s.
1840 و 1850 اینها رو بیشتر از کشورهای دیگر منتشر کرد. کشورهای در حال توسعه.
Developing countries with 81% of the world's population have only emitted 26% of these gases.
Therefore, we're facing a very serious humanitarian hazard, and we need to take serious measures to stop the emission of greenhouse gases.
Progress is being made, however. Beijing authorities are closing factories and outlawing burning coal for heating.
Naturally, a rise in the average temperature of the surface of the Earth from moderate levels can have bad consequences, and temperatures higher than that can pave the way for various disasters on the Earth's surface.
We're working in a totally unsustainable way. We do things to feel at ease, but we only have one planet Earth. We can't later immigrate and leave this planet. If we destroy it, where else can we go? This is it. And the destruction we're causing with technological development is enough to put our lives at risk now. As a human being, I'd ask, what sort of technological development have we accomplished? What sort of technology have we achieved? Or what have we done for human comfort that hasn't harmed us in any way? Give me one example.
The skyline is littered with factories, and toxic smoke pours into the air day and night. For those living here, it's a choice between pollution and
unemployment. Federal appeals court upheld the Environmental Protection Agency's emission standards for hazardous air pollutants from coal and oil-fired power plants. The court rejected state and industry challenges to rule the scientific
lawmaker in the European Parliament said reducing supply in the CO2 trading market would boost prices.
What does it mean to live in a polluted place? It means that particles, say 5 microns, 2.5 microns and 1 micron increase. Carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide increase. Now it depends on the quality of the gasoline and the gas that you use. The sulfur and nitrogen derivatives, ozone, and finally soot and particulates all scatter in the air, and they eventually enter the body either through the nose or the mouth. So body cells that start from the nose, eyes, and mouth and reach the depth of the lungs are all affected, and these substances enter the bloodstream through the respiratory system. It affects the brain. We become tired fast. We become impatient. We quickly lose our temper and verbally assault each other. There's no need for one to be ill. Those who are ill are at greater risk.
only see B2B, business to business. Just business to business. It's usually called B2B. This is a disaster. Even if it means death and costs us our lives, which is our most important index, we have a brain. We don't use it. The only thing we see in business is the money. Everything depends on how deep one's pockets are.
Development is a natural process in human growth, which has existed for thousands of years. It's now been accelerated, becoming faster and stranger. But during this development process, some of us have become rich. Some are filling up their bank accounts and becoming wealthy. It's interesting, though, that these same people, sometimes directly, but most times indirectly, have to somehow return this money.
The oil leaked for 87 days, the worst offshore spill in U.S. history. BP was later found to be grossly negligent for the explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon platform. And today, it agreed to a settlement that will include a $5.5 billion fine for violations of the Clean Water Act, $7.1 billion to the U.S. government, and five states to repair coastlines smeared by oil, $4.9 billion to settle economic claims by those five states, and up to $1 billion to 400 local governments. Louisiana, the most heavily damaged, gets almost $7 billion, the biggest share.
This is by no means chance and accident. Our experience in development over the past 100 or 200 years shows that technological advancement and city living have been the cause of this. Name any technology you like, or whatever has made human existence easier, and you'll find it's harmed the environment.
China has announced the successful containment of its worst ever reported oil spill, although much work remains to be done before an ongoing cleanup is complete. At a media briefing, the vice mayor of the northeastern coastal city of Dalian, where the spill occurred, said workers had used more than 40 kilometers of oil barriers and 65 tons of absorbent pads to stop the slick reaching international waters. Yet with oil remaining on beaches and in the water, he also acknowledged a full cleanup will be an arduous task.
Go back 160 years in time to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, the industrial age in the 1850s, to see an impact.
It's been about a century that we humans have opted for consumerism on the earth, and as we have moved forward in recent decades, consumer demand has risen.
Until a point, we lived along with the earth and the nature. From a point onwards, we just forgot about what the earth is, where it's come from, and where this kind of usage will lead us to. We just want everything. The high consumer demand that we're witnessing these days is just destroying the earth's natural resources.
But a leading scientist suggests the reasons for the drought may be even more worrying for Brazil in the long run. Has continued deforestation in the Amazon and in the Atlantic forest drastically altered the climate?
We created the packaging industry to be able to easily relocate food products and conserve them for longer periods, so we would be able to keep a packet of food or fruit juice for, say, 2 weeks without it being spoiled. What's been the outcome? Go take a look at the landfills to see what we've done to the earth by producing all this garbage, garbage that can't be recycled. It was done for our comfort, but it's also put our future in danger.
If we move back a few decades, there were a limited number of countries that were consumer-based and that used a lot of energy and products like the United States and in Europe. But these days, global consumption on Earth has sharply increased as countries in East Asia, especially China, have started boosting their consumption.
About 56% of these greenhouse gases are produced by fossil fuels. Naturally, the rise in the use of fossil fuels is due to energy requirements of machines used for ever-expanding development projects. To boost the machine age, the industrial age. Due to this boosting process, the developed world has had to increase its use of different kinds of fossil fuels. This has paved the way for partial deforestation, which aims to provide the agricultural requirements to cover total food needs of a growing global population. This causes change to the optimal 15-degree world average temperature.
In the northeastern prefecture of Miyagi, and what you're looking at right now on the screen is in the city of Sendai.
A couple of feet of water, so they have to stand out there until they can manage to get the boat across and then to take a big group of them into an entrance rack of ramp of high tension.
Gifted and Safi, Ramadan Mubarak, Holy Records.
Ramadan Mubarak, لكل مسلم, شهر لذيذ فيها, ينزل القرآن. Happy Ramadan to all Muslims, all the Quran descends in this holy month.
Insights into the Holy Quran, a special program for the holy month of Ramadan.
Welcome you, O holy man of blessings. Oh, yeah. You are sickness to my creator, for you my soul and heart has been purified.
Oh,
in the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. This is a special program for the holy month of Ramadan. In today's program, Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi explains some verses related to this blessed month. Please stay with us.
O month of mercy, you bring so much good. We pray that it never ends, but we know you gotta go as the seasons come and go, 'cause your time is set by Allah. Oh Ramadan, oh Ramadan, you're the month of the noble Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. We're going to be with you in this holy month of Ramadan, talking about the different verses of the Holy Quran regarding the benefits of fasting, the most important of them, piety or taqwa. We'll be with you again after you have listened to some verses of the Holy Quran regarding fasting.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. O you who have believed, decreed upon you is fasting as it was decreed upon those before you, that you may become righteous.
So, since we were talking about this verse of the Holy Quran regarding fasting, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا كُتِبَ عَلَيْكُمُ الصِّيَامُ كَمَا كُتِبَ عَلَى الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ, we try to discuss a little bit over the concept of piety, the true meaning of it, and the benefits of piety. We concluded that piety, in its general meaning, covers all the things that causes man to be away from sinful acts. Piety is what drives man into being the true servant of the Almighty Allah, without even getting close to committing sinful acts. But piety itself has got its own benefits, based upon the different verses of the Holy Quran. We were trying to elaborate on this fact. The Lord of the Worlds, in the 35th verse of chapter A'raf, says, يَا بَنِي آدَمْ إِمَّا يَأْتِيَنَّكُمْ رُسُلٌ مِّنْكُمْ يَقُصُّونَ عَلَيْكُمْ آيَاتِي فَمَنِ اتَّقَى وَأَصْلَحَ فَلَا خَوْفٌ عَلَيْهِمْ وَلَا هُمْ يَحْزَنُونَ. O children of Adam, if there comes to you apostles from among you, relating to you my communications, then whoever shall guard against evil and act aright, they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve. So, having no fear or sorrow is counted as one of the benefits of fasting. The pious have no grief. Obviously, only a person who has no strong shelter for himself has fear and is sorrowful. But how will a person who has chosen piety and is wholeheartedly devoted to God and has no guardian, protector, giver of honor, no king other than God be sorrowed? The pious can remove grief and sorrow. And it is really interesting that whether the fear is related to this world or hereafter, only piety can remove it and nothing else. And interestingly, not only the pious can actually remove these griefs, they also will reach a higher rank.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
شهر رمضان الذي أنزل فيه القرآن هدى للناس وبينات من الهدى والفرقان فمن شهد منكم الشهر فليصم ومن كان مريضا أو على سفر فعدة من أيام أخر يريد الله بكم اليسر ولا يريد بكم العسر ولتكملوا العدة ولتكبروا الله على ما هداكم ولعلكم تشكرون.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it. And whoever